Come with me, my little shaman, to this glam symposium as we explore the genre known as horror. Each display that you will see is oozing with depravity, from splatter films to those with much less gore. You'll find the souls of others who have wandered through these doors. Your sisters or your brothers, I believe this one is yours. So heed my warning, precious one, you can't turn back once it's begun. You can't unsee the terrors once you see them. For this is the Hollywood Horror Museum!
Yes. Greetings, my incorrigible incriminators. I am Gory Graves, curator for the Hollywood Horror Museum. And I'm here to give you brilliant insights and witty repartee, and asking the eternal question, is there life after death? But more importantly, do you have to pay for Nookie? I digress. Today's incredibly mediocre episode comes from our being hell-bent, one would say, on finding a guest. Yes, all of our guests were out of town for conventions, so we figured we might call the board members. Not one of the famous ones, unfortunately, but one who apparently put it all together. The producer, so to speak, but not like the Mel Brooks film. His name is Houston Huddleston. Why, I don't know, but we shall hopefully find that out as we discuss the Hollywood Horror Museum with one Mr. Houston Huddleston.
Master! Master!
And that is my master. Hapless sidekick, Gorge.
Did someone call my first name first and my only name once?
Hello, Gorge.
Hello, Master.
What do you want?
I was lonely.
I don't care.
I discovered a brand new talent.
Everyone can do that.
No, not that. Double entendre. I discovered that when I go to sleep and I dream, I can bring back my metaphysical being in a physical form.
Indeed.
But unfortunately, it was just a dead rat.
That said, here is Mr. Houston Huddleston.
Hello, I'm Houston Huddleston, formerly known as Floyd Houston Huddleston III. That's my legal name.
And why don't you call yourself that?
I'm waiting for my castle.
Charming. So tell me, how did you get into this? Who the hell are you?
Well, I'm a writer, primarily. At least I was before this whole museum thing began. The whole thing began with a bridge, the bridge from the Enterprise from Star Trek. I was working at a company in Hollywood, and the person at this company worked with Paramount, and he told me that he was quitting the company, and I said, darn, now I'll never get to turn my living room to the bridge of the Enterprise, jokingly. And he said, be careful what you wish for. And so he gave me the address of this warehouse, and I went down there and I saw the entire set from Star Trek Next Generation sitting outside, having been rained upon for the last at least 5 years. There was Captain Picard's chair with a rip through the back of it, big fiberglass pieces and metal pieces, and it was overwhelming. I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I knew I had to rescue it because it was going to be destroyed the very next week because they wanted it, quote unquote, the hell off their lot. So I basically tried to figure it out, and I paid for the shipping, and they ended up moving it to the back of my backyard, because I had no place to put it. I just knew I had to get it off that spot. And so began about 5 or 6 months of trying to find someone to help me, because I had no money. And I called all the studios and rich people I knew, and none of them cared. So I went to a Star Trek convention, and I figured, okay, if the Trekkies can't help me, no one can. And I did a Kickstarter, and the Trekkies did care, and we raised about 65 grand out of that, and that put us on our way. It paid off all the bills that I had already accumulated from having to buy pieces from the Star Trek Vegas, Star Trek Experience, and we got our board of directors. We made it a nonprofit, 501c3, And I got Ronald D. Moore, who is producer and writer for Star Trek Next Generation and a bunch of other stuff, Battlestar Galactica, Andrew Probert, who designed the actual ship, Rick Sternbach, who designed the tricorder for Next Gen, and Voyager, and a whole bunch of brilliant, amazing people. Greg Nicotero just recently on the Sci-Fi and the Horror Museum Board.
So that's the Hollywood Science Fiction Museum. How did you create the Hollywood Horror Museum?
Well, it was a similar way. I kept getting offers of horror props to the Sci-Fi Museum, which made no sense. And we literally couldn't include horror props in the Sci-Fi Museum because some of our sponsors and relationships are with NASA and space and science and educational and, you know, kindergarten through elementary through high school contacts, educational. And they wouldn't have anything to do with the Science Fiction Museum if we included gory horror props. So I knew I had to differentiate the two museums and create a second 501c3 nonprofit for the horror museum. But I honestly didn't know if there was even an interest in a horror museum.
But horror is one of the top two or three genres in the world. One of the biggest, greatest money makers.
That's true, but I'd been told that a horror museum was a terrible idea, that the sci-fi and space and science made a whole lot of sense, but the horror museum was just for gore hounds and all that. And let's face it, I don't want to put time and money of my own into something that's going to fail. So even though American Horror Story and has won many Emmys and Walking Dead is one of the greatest moneymakers of all time, biggest ratings and all this stuff, it was still a long shot and still is a long shot to corporations because they see the word horror and they think, oh, just blood and guts and scaring people and that's it. But there's the whole educational aspect of it and teaching. I've met so many people who have been inspired by horror the same way that they've been inspired by Star Trek for being an astronaut. Well, horror people typically get into special effects. The horror kids, the monster kids, as Rick Baker and those guys call themselves.
I got a question.
Yes, Gorge?
Houston, have you ever killed anybody?
Not yet.
I got another question. Are you gay?
No.
I am.
So time-wise, this all happened at the end of 2014, I think it was. And I learned that Universal was going to destroy the soundstage that the Phantom of the Opera set was on. They were saving the set, but they were destroying the soundstage because of asbestos and all this stuff. So I thought, well, you know, where are they going to put that set? Because I want to walk into a spot where that entire set is still on display. The Phantom of the Opera set is the oldest set in captivity. It was built in 1925 and has been used not just in the famous Lon Chaney silent film, but so many other movies and TV shows and even Knight Rider, my God. So specifically for Knight Rider, that's why we're saving the set. No. But anyway, I went to Universal and I said that we wanted this thing. And he said, well, you know, it's presently being thought of for something else, and I'm thinking it's the Academy Museum, but the Academy Museum's not going to take the entire set. So rather than break it up, I thought, well, that would be perfect for a horror museum. So I started going to all the most famous horror people of all time. The first one I met was Tom Holland, director of Fright Night and writer for Psycho 2 and creator of Chucky, director of that. For Child's Play. And I just interviewed him, and I was just trying to get a feel of this because I knew the sci-fi end. I'd been immersed with that for the last 2 years. And I said, if we do this, you know what? He's the one who brought this up, Tom Holland. He said, you know, you're going to need a separate board of directors for the horror museum. And I said, you're absolutely right. Do you want to be on it? He said, yes. I said, great. So it happened that unbelievably smooth as butter. And then after that, Mick Garris, the same thing. Greg Nicotero called me up, and I was blown away. The director-producer of Walking Dead called me up and just said, the first thing he said, please don't think I'm an asshole for, you know, not getting back to you, he says, I'd love to be involved with both museums. I'm a fan and a collector, and this is something I've always wanted to do myself, and I just didn't have the time. And he said, my entire collection could fill up your entire museum. I said, I believe it, you know? And then I met Sarah Karloff, the daughter of Boris Karloff, and I met Victoria Price, the daughter of Vincent Price, and all these people wanted to be involved, and for the right reasons. So, and then John Carpenter, my gosh, I met his wife, and she said, well, why isn't John involved with your museum? I said, I'd love for him to. I don't know how to. And she said, let me talk to him. About 2 weeks later, John was on board. And it's been incredible, the people we have involved and the passionate fans who really want this to happen, including me.
So what's the next step?
Well, the next step is, of course, raising the funds, which we're doing right now through the conventions we bring our props to and having fans, you know, buy a t-shirt or a hat or donate for this or that. And the sponsors we desperately need, which we're going after right now. And then by 2017, the end of 2017, we're going to hopefully start our tour and travel all around the world, because we've already got an interest from China and Japan, and hopefully we'll get American interest. Now, the difference between the Sci-Fi Museum tour that begins in the beginning of the first half of 2017, and the horror museum, the sci-fi one is tied in directly with kids and science and space and Lockheed Martin and Boeing, all this sort of mentality. Now, the horror one would be more on the filmatic aspect, the filmmaking, the writing, the directing, the technical stuff, the making of, the art of special effects. There's really nothing like that. There are shows like Face Off, but other than very specific spots where you can learn makeup, there's nothing to bring the kids in to show them, okay, you know, this Walking Dead monster zombie that you're so afraid of, it's just rubber, and, you know, it's a puppet under. If kids know that, they won't be hiding under the bed and as scared as some of them are. And I learned this from Tom Savini. His daughter mentioned a story once where his daughter walked into the living room once and there were all these gory, disgusting props, and she was just totally cool with it, and she was like 8 years old. And if more people, if more families exposed their kids to the behind the scenes of it, they wouldn't need all this, you know, petrified, traumatized for life psychotherapy. Because God knows, when I was a kid, I grew up in Hollywood around that stuff. Not as much gore, but I grew up around Universal Studios, where they'd cut a fake gash in your arm and show you how it wasn't silicone back then, it was sort of putty, wax, and they put the fake blood in, and they put the bruising. It was old, I think it was Ben Nye, and yeah, so you'd see this stuff. I was 5 years old, I always remember that, and it was amazing. It was phenomenal. I was there at the tail end of what was called the Man of a Thousand Faces attraction at Universal. And it was so amazing. You got to see, you know, very, not pedestrian, but it was very mainstream. But still, you got to see what prosthetics were and how it was done and the magic behind it, not just CG.
Have you always been a fan of horror?
Oh, well, always. I grew up with watching Saturn 3, so, you know, what's more horrible than that? No, I grew up with the Universal Monsters. I grew up with 8mm film of, I think it was House of Frankenstein, where it was Boris Karloff as the Mad Doctor and Glenn Strange. Oh, and Carradine as the Dracula. That's a really good movie. There's some great stuff in that. And you got the three stories or the four stories of all the monsters. Dracula's in the first part, and then there's Frankenstein and the Wolfman, and Lon Chaney Jr., of course. And that's a wonderful thing. So I grew up watching that over and over, and as many of those as I could find. It's alive! It's alive! And
you're just crazy to know who I am, aren't you? All right, I'll show you.
You know, all that stuff. And Yeah, the Universal stuff. And then I watched Dracula, the Universal redo in 79. And Papa, coming with his glowing eyes. And that was terrifying stuff. It's still really creepy and scary and very effective. And The Exorcist just traumatized me. And so also, my parents, when I was 5 years old, I auditioned for Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. And I didn't know what it was, but my parents read the original script, and the original script had, it was straight from the book, and the original script had Danny using the Lord's name in vain and cursing and all this stuff, which I was a five-year-old from a Christian family. My parents weren't about to let me do that. So I auditioned, I did a crummy job. That was the end of it. I think my father was friends with Scatman Carruthers. So I got in there. I never met Kubrick. I never met Jack Nicholson until many years later. And I'm grateful I didn't do that movie because I would have done a crappy job and it would have traumatized me.
Did you act for any other things?
Not really. I was a crummy kid actor. I was a good singer. I was a good performer, but I was a crummy, eat the rubber fake hamburger, pretend like you like it. Mmm, yummy. I would try to analyze it, and I would psychoanalyze stuff as opposed to go with the mood, the feeling, and just go for it like most kids instinctively do. I would try to think about it, and it just, as a writer, that's brilliant. As a kid actor, it sucks. I would never have hired me. I've met so many brilliant kid actors who just... here's a great example. I met this little girl once, and I think I had her say, son of a bitch. I think that was it. And so it was this little 9-year-old girl, sweetest, cutest little girl, and I said, do you have a problem? Would you have a problem saying that word? She goes, oh no, I've said cocksucker, and you know, and she goes on like this, and I'm like, okay. She goes, but my mommy told me those are bad words and I shouldn't say those words. I'm not a parent, but if I were a parent, and I don't even have any brothers or sisters, but I don't know if I could let my kid do that, but there are plenty of people who can and do a brilliant job, and the kids don't turn out screwed up.
Have you written anything that was, successful?
No, sadly, I have not. I ghost wrote for a kid's film with Emily Osment, but I've written a lot of things that have never been seen, mostly because I always had an agent that didn't really push for me. And also, I was coming from a very European mentality, even in my comedy, and it was never the obvious gross-out type humor. It was always trying to go for Monty Python or intellectual or what have you. And then when I went to England, the producer I was working for didn't really appreciate what I was bringing in, because I was trying to bring in all my favorite directors, Ken Russell and Alex Cox and the guy who did Absolute Beginners, Julian Temple, and all of these, I think, brilliant people. And I was just head to head. So when I went to England, I thought, oh wow, now everyone's going to want me to do Monty Python stuff. And then that wasn't the case. It was much more dry, closed off, non-controversial stuff, and that's not fun to me. So I came back to America. I did a thing called The Greatest Show Ever, which ended up not being so. That was in 2008 or so, 2007, and had Mickey Rooney, and that's how I met Joe Dante. Joe directed one of the segments. He directed the Mickey Rooney segment. And Greatest Show Ever still has not been seen, and still hasn't been completed because we ran out of money. And the producer just threw up his hands and didn't help, and it was not fun experience. But I learned a lot. And I met Joe Dante, and when we started doing this horror museum, I asked him to be on the board, and he instantly got it and said yes.
I'm eating my spleen, I'm eating my spleen.
So tell me, what will this horror museum be like in either the tour or the permanent museum?
Well, the tour is going to pay for the permanent museum, so it's going to take a few years. Because this is not just, hey, we're going to throw some stuff in a room and that's it. The creatures that people like Greg Nicotero and Rob Bottin and Rick Baker, all of these phenomenal artists, these sculptors, even Screaming Mad George and Steve Wang and all these amazing, brilliant people that most people don't know. Stan Winston's company, of course, Stan Winston himself as well as his artists, have made so many phenomenal things that unfortunately have rotted over the years or thrown out, or they were all made out of foam for the most part. This was before silicone. Silicone, under the right circumstances, will last forever if you keep it, or at least a hell of a long time. But, you know, at the time it was, okay, we're going to use this. Okay, it's going to throw it out after and boom, that's it. So you got these incredible restorers. One of our newest board members named Tom Spina is an incredible restorer. He's done miraculous things with these historical pieces that have, you can't blow on them without dust and a piece of it falling off. It's going to be walking into the set of, say, Bride of Frankenstein or The Mummy, more recently being 40 years ago, The Exorcist, The Shining, or Saw, all this. You will walk into the room, the set, a replica, of course, but you'll get that feeling. You'll see these incredible sculptures by these brilliant people like Mike Hill, who's also on our board of directors. There's Nick Mara, there's Howard Senft, there's some amazing people at K&B.
So will everything just be duplicates, or will it be using actual props as well?
Both, but the problem is with the actual props, they either don't exist, or they're in collectors' hands. And I'm not going from collector to collector saying, hey, give us your stuff. That's pretty imposing and presumptuous. Plus, they paid a lot of money for those things, and I don't expect them just to give them up. And we don't have the kind of money that they either paid or they're probably worth. So the pieces that we have that are props that are screen used, for the most part, have been either donated to us for a tax deduction, or we've just stolen from the back of trucks. No, I'm kidding. No, the bulk of what we have is going to be not screen used because, quite frankly, for the tour, we can't use screen used. It'll fall apart. You're going 3 months here, 6 months there. You know, there's another element of this, that the things that you see on the screen don't look like they do in real life because of the lighting, because of over the years, over 20, 30, 40 years, the color has degraded or the material's rotted or cracked or whatever it is. So, or shriveled up. That's another big problem. Many foam latex appliances have shriveled up because that's what they do over the years. So the tour over the next probably 5 years over the world, both the US and Canada, as well as these other countries, will bring in the revenue we need to build the permanent museum, hopefully in Hollywood.
Do you feel that families and the little kiddies will be turned off and terrified to come to the horror museum?
Not at all, and let me explain why. Both the traveling exhibit and the permanent museum will have two separate entrances. And that's where I think this is kind of groundbreaking. Because the EMP has a wonderful display of incredible props from John Landis, Bob Burns, and all these incredible people. But there's a warning in front saying, you know, this is what you're about to get. I still want to open the eyes and the minds of people who wouldn't necessarily go to the horror museum. So the way of doing that is you have two separate entrances. The mainstream family entrance would be everything from the Universal Monsters, Nosferatu, the Munsters, the Addams Family, the Cars from the Munsters, the Ghostbusters, all this kind of stuff, Beetlejuice. And it would be palatable to people who aren't necessarily horror fans. They'd be people who, the general public, would be going to Universal, but not for Halloween Horror Nights. But, you know, more like Not Scary Farm or even the Disney, well, not that mainstream, but you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean, indeed. I don't like those types of people.
Well, you're subject to your opinion. But the thing is, if we don't do that, you won't bring in the busloads of kids. You won't have the schools wanting to bring their kids to show them the more palatable, the less gory and violent and sexual stuff, unless you do it that way. Now, the other side will be the stuff that the gore hounds and the hardcore horror people want. So you do have both. And I think that's the only way to do that. And it doesn't just ostracize one or the other. And also, we got Clive Barker on our board of directors. And my gosh, the stuff that he can contribute is phenomenal. Because we want to have a whole Hellraiser room where you walk into the attic from Hellraiser 1 and you see Frank standing there with all the hooks in him. And there's the Cenobites on the other side, and you'll see the collection of the different boxes there, the different puzzle boxes. Oh my gosh, this is going to be just every fan's dream. I'm so excited about this.
Now, may I ask how you are doing this without getting your quote-unquote ass suit off?
Number one, we are working with as many studios as want to work with us. We have already done sponsorship things with Paramount and Universal and Sony, and we're working on Warner. So we want them involved with this thing. It's not just we're just going to fall upon the laurels of fair use and we can do this anyway, so screw you guys. We want this to be a copacetic relationship between the studios and our nonprofit museum foundation and the educational possibilities, and for them the possibilities of promoting past, present, and future films and TV shows. So even though many of the things, yes, we legally can present as artistic representations of these classic films, we'd prefer for the studio to embrace it and just say, yes, okay, this is something that we don't do, that it's separate from anything we have done or will do, and oh my God, we can make so much money from this. We can sell the Blu-rays in your gift shop, we can sell the toys, and we can do this, whatever. So the smart ones have embraced it. The holder-outers are the ones who typically, they're either afraid to get fired from their boss, or they just don't grasp it.
What has been more difficult for you to do, the Science Fiction Museum or the Horror Museum?
Definitely the Science Fiction Museum, for a few reasons. Number one, I didn't know what I was doing when the whole thing began. And when we started the museums, it was kind of just because it was a necessity, because there was no museum in the world willing to take the sets or do with them what we wanted to do, which was open them up to the masses and do an educational programming and all this stuff. So that, you know, that began in 2012. It's been really rough. When it came to the Horror Museum, my God, all these amazing, phenomenal heroes of mine all jumped on board. There are only a few people who haven't agreed to be on our board of directors.
And they are?
Well, there's Stephen King. I've asked him a couple of times without being obnoxious, and he's just not a joiner. I mean, once we get the thing going and opening and all that, I'm going to bug him again because I'd love for him to be. There's a writer named R.L. Stine, who is a sweet, wonderful person, great writer. I definitely want him involved, but at this point, he's just too busy. One is Bob Burns. Bob's been offered numerous times from other people, hey, let's open a museum and blah, blah. And I'm sure he's just sick of it, hearing, you know, things that are going to fail. The other person, there's John Landis, and there's Rick Baker. And neither of them have I've reached out. I can only do so much without being obnoxious, but they know about us, and once we get our show on the road, so to speak, I'm just going to keep inviting them because they need to be a part of this. It's that simple.
Which of the two museums has been the most fun developing?
I would say the most creative has been the Horror Museum, and that's because I'm not stuck with the restrictions of the Sci-Fi Museum because I'm not a scientist. I'm a Star Trek fan. I'm a Star Wars fan. I think it's so cool. I love the models and the toys and the you know, I love, and of course, you know, go on down from Forbidden Planet and Metropolis and go down the list of all the amazing science fiction that's been done, but I'm not a technical kind of guy. I'm more of a creator, fantasy, writer kind of guy, not the guy who can spew off NASA quotations and this and that. When it comes to the science, I leave that completely to our board of directors, who are the scientific-minded people, like Catherine Coleman, the astronaut, or Elizabeth LeBlanc, who's the expert in STEM-based education and all that. That's not my expertise, and I'm the first to admit I failed at science. I stink at it. But who cares? This isn't the Houston Museum. This is the Hollywood Science Fiction Museum and the Hollywood Horror Museum. Now, for the Horror Museum, I can relate more because it's about being scared, which is always fun for me. And there are no rules, really, as long as we separate those two sides of the museum, the family side and the gory side.
I like human minds. They taste delicious.
I must say, I thought that the last 40 minutes would be dreadfully boring, but actually it's been slightly fascinating.
Thank you very much.
I was talking about me, but whatever. I want to thank you, Houston Huddleston, for creating this museum, for having the guts, for having the insight, the inspiration, and your enthusiasm, which is disgusting.
And again, thank you very much.
Master?
Yes, Gorch?
Can I ask some questions, please?
Oh, very well.
Oh, goody. Houston, what's your sign?
I'm Pisces.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Have you met any famous people?
Well, I met Jack Nicholson many, many years ago. It was during Two Jakes when I met him. I've met Cassandra Peterson a few times. I met Anna Paquin many years ago when she was doing Almost Famous, long before True Blood. I met Robert Englund in an elevator at Texas Frightmare. I was in the front of the elevator. I just walked in and I heard from behind me, "Get off! Get off the floor!" You know, like that. And it was Robert Englund doing Freddy. I do a terrible Freddy imitation, but I looked around, who the hell? And yeah, it was so wonderful. It's one of the greatest moments of my life. I wish I could have met Betsy Palmer. And I still watch reruns of, I think, To Tell the Truth, or one of those old shows from the 60s. And she's so beautiful on those shows. My gosh. You know, I'm used to her looking, you know, like Jason's mom. But she was just stunningly beautiful and a Broadway performer. I've gotten to meet and to know Kane Hodder. I can't say enough great things about him. Adrian King, Doug Bradley, Norman Reedus, Michael Rooker. I mean, these people are the loveliest, kindest people who truly love their fans. I saw Michael sitting there once after everyone else had left, signing autographs for free for the staff, the unpaid volunteers.
Can I eat your spleen?
No, just because I may need it later, and I don't really know what it's for, but you never know.
Aw, darn!
On that terrible note, thank you, Houston, for not being a jerk.
And thank you, Gorch, for being yourself.
What?
And now for my words of wisdom. What have we learned today? We learned that Houston's favorite color is blue, that he isn't a jerk. At least that's what he tells us. We've learned that the Hollywood Science Fiction Museum spawned the Hollywood Horror Museum. We learned that both museums will be touring around the world in 2017. We also learned that a man can survive by eating his own body parts. Thank you, listeners, and if you wish to support us or help us in any way, please visit us at HollywoodHorror.org, as in organ, or visit our Facebook page, Hollywood Horror Museum, or our Twitter handle, Horror Museum, at Twitter. And thank you, Gorch.
What for?
For this.
That tickles. Could you do it again? This time with more feeling.
Good night, everyone. Now I see we've reached the end, and as you go, my faithful friend, may all your travels end in Carpe Diem. Farewell to the Hollywood Horror Museum!